All right. You can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay, great, thanks. I apologize because for some reason I don't seem to be able to quickly push because I have forgotten the link to this. To this demonstration. Oh, no, it is. No, that's the old one. So the link is broken, but the lesson is there. I hope you can access it from the prep work link. But if you click here, you will get an error, which I certainly screwed something up. But it doesn't matter. You can access the lesson from this link. You know, if you click here and go to home, you can get the lesson, or you can access the lesson from the Indico agenda. I think that also should work. Apologies for that, too many little things going on.
I just refreshed the page.
Okay, so it is time for the demonstration. This time you can take a break from working on the terminal. And as far as I know, you can just watch and please ask questions. And also I like to ask the rest of the organizers, especially Clemens and Kathy, if they are around, to just jump in and clarify something that I might be saying wrong, or if they want to add something, that's also welcome. Okay, so the idea of this demonstration, so as all my demonstrations, they are really demonstrations, so you can just watch. Unfortunately, you have to listen to me. But this is really cool stuff. So if you haven't heard it before, I'm sure you will find it interesting. So the basic idea is that you can use commercial clouds available in order to run the very analysis that we just did, for instance, especially the first part, the skimming part, which takes a lot of resources. You can run this on these commercial clouds. Okay, so what the way that I'm going to proceed is I'm going to go through basic concepts. By the way, just as a disclaimer, I'm not an expert on this. I'm still learning. And so I will give you my version of these different concepts, somehow very simplified. And the idea is that you can try to Google more information and learn a little bit more. Okay, so the first thing is the Google Cloud Platform. I'm sure you have heard it, and I'll just go with the flow and try to search for it in my Google. And the first link that it comes out is this one, right? And then, you know, if you're logged in with a Google account, like I am, with my Gmail account, then it will prompt you to accept $300 of free credits. So essentially you can test this for free. You get 3 months, $300 for 3 months, and you can play around and whatever, the stuff you want to do, and whatever resources you can get with those $300. And okay, but I have used up actually all my money, so it's not free for me anymore, but it doesn't matter because what we're going to do is going to be really a couple of cents at most. So I'm going to go to the console directly. And if you are following the directions, the tutorial, that's my second concept, right? So the Google Cloud Platform has its console. So we're calling this the console. And essentially this is the place on the web where you can find all the different services that Google provides. So you can do amazing things if you're especially if you're a computing person. You can find a lot of goodies here, but the most important part is this compute for us, right? Because you have here the compute engine area where you can, for instance, start or fire up a virtual machine. If you don't happen to have a good, powerful machine, you can use or try to rent one of those machines here. You can even set up storage. You know, if you need a disk on the cloud, you can set up your own personal disk, things like that. Okay, and then you also have this Kubernetes engine, which brings us to the next concept. I guess you went through this, some of the Kubernetes basic concepts yesterday during the prep work, but essentially Kubernetes is a software that allows you to manage the containers in general. Okay, so let's look at this. I presented you the console, of course. The Kubernetes engine is one of the services for Google, but the Kubernetes itself is a software which orchestrates containers in a computer cluster. So as I was trying to explain during the prep work session, you know, it would be fantastic if you can throw in those containers that you have been playing with. You can throw them into a very large or a larger cluster of computers, and then you can use those computers to execute all the jobs that we have been working with and have the output much, much faster. So that's the idea. And this is a nice picture that I found of the way the architecture works. Essentially, when you sign in or when you access this web platform, you interact with an API of the Google Kubernetes engine. Essentially, the Kubernetes engine in Google is a place where you can create clusters with Kubernetes, okay, and do all these kind of deployments of your containers so they can perform an analysis, for instance. The basic concepts are the master node, as you saw, and the worker nodes. So the master nodes, they're different master nodes and the Google infrastructure, and they take care of instructing the worker nodes on the kind of pods that they need to run. And essentially a pod in the Google Kubernetes abstraction is, for us, it would be just a Docker container. So you can think that a pod is just a Docker container. Okay? You can put many containers in a pod, but I don't think we will be doing that. And then you can run this in parallel, okay? And on top of that, you can put some services or those kind of things. For instance, if you're running a container with a web server, you can create a load balancer, a service, so your clients can access that web server, things like that. So that's a Kubernetes cluster. but we are interested in running workflows, essentially, right? Like we just did. We are interested in running something like this using our containers. We are interested in skimming, then merging perhaps our files. You know, after you skim, you can maybe run like a one root file for each container, and you run a bunch of these containers and you get a bunch of these root files, and then you can merge them. And then these merge files would be the ones that we were working with just recently, you know, the ones that I asked you to copy from the CERN box. And then we can perform an analysis over them, and then we can plot histograms. I keep making mistakes in my typing. So that's the really nice thing about this Kubernetes engine clusters. We can execute workflows, and so this could be very automatically done. And usually, when we work on workflows, we talk about YAML files. So all these workflows are configured using these famous YAML files. Okay. So we talked about pods, but in essence, when you interact with the Kubernetes cluster, you don't really create pods, okay? What you create is something called deployment. And a deployment is one of the different abstraction layers in Kubernetes, but they are above pods. And so in practice, you always create deployments in Kubernetes, not pods. All right. And the other concept that I like to mention is Argo. Argo is a software. It really wraps around the Kubernetes main commands and such, as I understand it. So it's, you can see it as having the Kubernetes commands on steroids, because it allows you to handle those workflows that we need to do in a much easier way. So that's Argo. And we will be using this. And that's why I mentioned this. So, okay. If you're a regular Joe like myself and want to do some particle physics analysis, you can go to the Google Cloud platform. Okay, let me put my own instructions in my other computer so I can remember them and not skip anything. All right, so you can just go even right now. I don't want you to go right now, but you know, later you can check this out by yourself. And so you will arrive to this console and you can check out all the different products, but we are interested in this Kubernetes engine. In the cloud platform, you can have different projects. Right now I have two projects, this CMS Open Data. We will be accessing this project tomorrow, okay? Today, I just wanted to use my personal, I call it HIP USFQ because that's my institution. And I was using this for teaching, for example. And so I created this project. So I'm gonna use that one. It's already checked, so that's fine. So you can differentiate if you're doing different analysis. Maybe you can create different projects, for instance. And then we can create a Kubernetes cluster of machines, right? So we go here, Kubernetes, we click on clusters. And the first thing that appears is, okay, do you want to create a Kubernetes cluster? And I say, yes, create one. You have other options. The good thing about this environment is that at all stages, it gives you the ability to learn more. So you always will be seeing links with the learn more stuff. Okay, but okay, let's just go to create. And I would like to create a standard Kubernetes cluster, not really a predefined or autopilot, because I want to show you a few things. So I'll go for this one. Okay. And you know, even if you have to, if you're out of your free credits, your $300 credit, don't be afraid to just create your clusters, because at the end we're gonna destroy everything, and so it's not gonna cost you anything, at least to try. All right, so you can give it a name. For instance, I can put my own name and create a cluster. You can see that you can choose different zones. For the workshop tomorrow, for the hands-on part, you won't have to create your cluster by yourself, okay? It will be created for you already, because all these steps may take some time, and sometimes there are some errors and such. So we don't want to spend time doing that. That's why I set up this demonstration. You can choose your cluster. You can choose it to be created in different regions. Tomorrow, the cluster that you will be using will be created in Europe. Okay, so we'll take care of that automatically, hopefully. All right, but I'll just stick to this US central one. Okay, and there are many ways of creating this. You can see the different options here, but okay, I'll go with the standard, or well, it's not really a standard way of creating anything, but maybe a recommended way of creating this. So, there are a few things that we can change. For instance, we can click here for this default pool, and it will ask us how many nodes we want to have in our cluster. Remember when we saw this picture here? So these are the worker nodes, and these are the guys, maybe the physical machines or virtual machines that will harbor the pods so they can work in them. So the more nodes you have, maybe the more jobs you can put in them. But for now, we can just click on one node with the ability to have some auto-scaling, meaning that Google will decide whether it needs more machines or not. But we can give it a range, so from 0 to 4 machines. So because you can put 100 maybe, but it will cost you a lot of money. So 4 machines work for us for now. And there is also an option to use pre-emptible, what is called pre-emptible machines, which really reduces the costs. I don't remember exactly where was that. If Clemens, you can remind me. I probably missed that somewhere.
You can go to nodes. Edgar, you can go to nodes in the to the left.
There are many options left, that you have here.
In the left nodes, and they're down.
But somewhere in these options, here. So see that you have this this option of enable preemptible nodes. So the claim is that if you use these preemptible nodes, which you get the description there, these are instances that last up to 24 hours, okay? And the price is really lowered. So if you wanna test something for 24 hours, maybe it is best to check this so you can reduce your costs. Okay, so all right, I have chosen 4 machines. They can be rescaled also. The nodes, in the nodes tab, you can choose what kind of machine you want to use. So by default, you will get a machine with 2 CPUs and 4 gigabytes of memory, but it turns out that each CMSSW job takes about 2 gigabytes of memory, excluding all the overhead due to the different servers and things that we will see that will be running in parallel with in the machine. So let's choose perhaps the standard 4 with 4 CPUs and 16 gigabytes of memory, just for our check. And once we have done that, if you want, you can click on this, the preemptibles. We can create our node, our cluster. It's that simple. It's just a few clicks away. Don't be afraid of creating this. It will take a moment. See the wheel here spinning. It will take a moment, but just a few minutes. And while we wait for that, I'd like to introduce you to the Cloud Shell. So let's go. I always like to work with images. So you're here, right? And you're trying to interact with the whole cluster. And this part right here, I mean, you have to interact through some machine, through some terminal, or through some console that you can type things on. And so Google provides you with such a computer. And you can access that. It's called the Cloud Shell. You can access that through this little icon here, which is just a prompt icon. Let me know if it is too small, if the letters are too small. So you can click here while the cluster is building, Okay, and this will be your gateway, not only to the Kubernetes cluster, but to anything you want to do in the Google Cloud platform. You know, if you're an app developer, you can have another project and have a different type of resources and such. But this terminal is essentially a machine that Google provides you with that can be used to interact with whatever service you're building inside the Google Cloud platform. Okay. And the one command that is used for interacting with all these Google Cloud platform services is the Google Cloud, okay? I'm sorry, the gcloud. So there's a gcloud command that rules everything here. The documentation is very extensive, but you can do, for instance, help, and I think that's the right, get a description of what you can do with this. I'm gonna make this a little bit bigger. Right, it's a very very powerful command. And the idea is that with this gcloud, you can control or you can get access to the different services. Okay, and so at some point, what we want to do is to connect to the cluster that we just made. We haven't connected yet because it's not done. It's still spinning and we're waiting for that. But before that, you have to, so I probably don't have to do this again, but I'll just run this command just in case. You have to get some sort of authentication. And the idea is that you run this gcloud authentication login, and it will prompt you to some verification. And you can copy this thing or click on this thing. Maybe I have to copy this. Oops, there is a, I can click on it. And it will ask you, right? It's just like a normal authentication. I will authenticate myself with my Gmail account again, although I think I didn't need it. And it will provide you with a kind of password or key, that's the right term for it. And you have to enter your verification key right here. Okay, and once you have done that, you are authenticated and you can start interacting with all the resources in the Google Cloud platform. So, all right, our cluster is already made. I know because there is this green check mark. All right, and now I need to connect to it. If you go to these three dots here, you see the connection button, and if you click on it, it will give you a command, you know, a Google gcloud command with which you can connect to your cluster. And it makes sense, right? Because it says, okay, Google Cloud container clusters get credentials for the Edgar cluster that I just created in this zone and under the project help Joseph Q. I can choose to copy this directly into the cloud shell by myself or ask the thing to run it in the cloud. And if I press on that, it will copy the command for me and I can just execute it. And it asks me if I authorize this connection. I say yes. And once I have done that, I have connection to my Kubernetes cluster. At this moment, I can interact with my cluster. I'm still outside in a sense, you know. It's not like I log into the cluster. That's not the way that you should think about this because sometimes, when you want to use some computing resources and some institution, you have to log into this institution. I don't think this is something like that. You are always working in this machine that Google provides you to interact with the cluster, but you never log into the cluster. That's the difference. And in order to interact with the cluster, we have this very powerful command again. So that completes actually my creation of the cluster. So that's the first demo, but if you click Let me see. If you click on the arrow, you can go to the next part. And the next part is about the very powerful command. Just as gcloud, we have the kubectl command, or some people call it kubectl. I don't know why, but they call it kubectl. I like to call it kubectl. It's easier to pronounce for me. All right, so I'll be teaching you about this command and how to use it to interact with the cluster. Okay. All right. So first off, I put a link in my instructions that I'm going to copy here, and there is ample instructions on this command. Gcloud and kubectl are the commands. They are not just any command. They are the commands to control. With gcloud, you can access any resource in the Google Cloud platform. With kubectl, you can control your cluster, the cluster that you just created. And I like to, from time to time, I check out this cheat sheet. It's the official cheat sheet from Kubernetes. And you have many commands with a description of what they do, the kubectl options of the different things that you can do with it. It's not really a short cheat sheet. It's really large. So just for fun, we're going to run a few of these commands on the terminal, because we have connection already. And for instance, if you want to get your information about your nodes, you can execute this command. And as a matter of fact, what you get is essentially the configuration of your nodes. If you were to install Kubernetes in your own machines, in your own institution, you could see actually the display of the machines here. But in this case, it's just the configuration we used through the web to do it, because it's rather automatic. The other thing that you could run is something like, you can ask for the information of your cluster. So there's another command, for instance, that is called cluster info. And it gives you a little bit more information of the control plane. You were learning about this in your prep work, the control plane. This is the master machine, the main machine that is giving all the instructions to the different worker nodes, and then some other stuff as well. And there is also a command, if you had some pods running, you could get the information from the pod. So there is this kubectl get pod command, but of course we don't have anything right now. There are no resources in our namespace. The namespace is kind of like an area, like a subsection of the cluster. You can reserve namespaces for different purposes. For instance, I was teaching some high energy physics class, analysis class, and I had a few students. So I gave a namespace for each group of students, so they don't interfere with each other. But it was the same cluster, okay? But I can distribute the resources through this namespace. So that's another feature of Kubernetes. If we were running some services like the load balancer I was talking about, if we had a web server, we can also extract information about the status of the services with this command. And maybe one of the most important commands is the kubectl create command. So we can actually get some information about this command. You can run it like this, or in principle you can run it like, where is this thing? Well, there are many ways of running this. I, it's hard for me to read everything right now. But this is the command, you know, that, that creates elements in the Kubernetes Kubernetes cluster. So we're gonna try to run a few of these things. Time flies. I don't think I'm gonna be able to finish this demonstration, but I'd like to give you an idea of what you could do, and you can follow along if you are tempted to try this by yourself. Anyway, let's imagine, for instance, that we want to create a web server. You know, this is the classical example. And Nginx is one of the most famous web servers out there. And what they have done is that they have a containerized application of this software. So it lives somewhere in Docker Hub, right? You can go to Docker Hub and where all these containers live, you can actually create your own container and put it in Docker Hub. Nginx, and we can search for Nginx, and this is a very official repository for Nginx, and you can just Docker pull this Nginx and have your containerized web server. And so we'd like to deploy this into our cluster. We want to have one instance of this application running. So tomorrow we're gonna have an instance of, or several instances maybe, of our application running, meaning our CMSSW container running. So this is just an example to show you very easily. And so the way that you would do is something like this, right? Kubectl create, actually in Kubernetes, you don't interact with pods. You interact with this layer called deployment. And the deployment will make the appropriate number of pods. In this case, this very simple command creates just one. So I'm gonna run that, and the deployment is created. And you can check the deployment with this command called kubectl get. And you can see that it's ready already, you know, it's available, it's running because it's a server, so it's running. And it will be running there. And actually the nice feature for developers is that if the instance, if this instance of this web server dies for some reason, this pod, because it will be a pod, I can show you that it's a pod, right? I can get the pod, the information of the pod. And the status is that it's running. And it will be running until, for some reason, it crashes, you know, it's software and it can crash. Then Kubernetes will take care of that. We'll reinstantiate the pod and keep it running all the time. So you don't have to intervene mostly. Okay, this is the minimalistic way of running or creating an element in Kubernetes. So we already have something there going on. But there is a more advanced way of creating elements in Kubernetes, and that's through YAML files. So I'm gonna go ahead and delete my current deployment. So there are commands to do that, right? Kubectl delete deployment. At some point, if you do this often, you start seeing some logic into the arrangement of these words. And now we're gonna apply the we're gonna create this Nginx server, but through a YAML file. So this is more powerful, right? Because if you look at the YAML file, I have expanded it here in the lesson. If you look at the YAML file, it gives like a blueprint for Kubernetes to deploy the correct image. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that when we were deploying, when we were creating this deployment, what we did was to call the image from Docker. You know, this is the image, just like the image you downloaded from Docker for CMSSW, and just give it a name. Okay, but this is very minimal. You can expand this configuration with a YAML file. And for that, you could do something like this. right? And for instance, you can choose the version of the image, and you can choose to have two replicas of the same part, things like that. You know, we will go through this configuration for our own purposes later tomorrow, but that's possible. And so that's the another way of creating elements in the Kubernetes cluster. And you just do kubectl apply with the file, that's what the F stands for, and it's always a YAML file. And you can create things. I have to get the file first. I think I have a right. I have to get the file, of course. You have a few commands that are available, including wget, so that's nice. And then I can run my deployment. Yeah, so it is created. We can check that it is actually created. Yeah, and now we have two pods. Okay, they are being created, but at some point they will be running. Yeah, they are running already. This is the way, the basic way, or the essence of how you create elements in Kubernetes. You can do this with deployments of applications. You can do this with services like load balancers or HTTP services or NFS services, whatever you want. That's the way you do it. Okay. And for the rest of the tutorial, I was hoping that I would have time, but time is, it runs really limited. I was hoping to go through the rest of the lesson, which included installing this Argo workflow capabilities. And I have some instructions that I tested that they work. So I hope that if you feel tempted or inspired, you can check this by yourself. And then I was also having instructions on how to set up some disk space and run some NFS server on to be able to access this space and get the I didn't do that, but also an HTTP server, so you can access the files that you could produce from outside. All those things can be done. They take time. They have certain logic. I hope it is clear, the instructions that follow in case you want to test them. But all of these things that we have gone through in this tutorial, in this demonstration, will be automatically created for you tomorrow, hopefully. If not, we might have to go through all these steps again. And at the beginning, maybe since we run out of time, I can explain perhaps a little bit more about this Argo and how it works and how it will help us run our workflows. I don't know if this is clear or if there are questions. I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Edgar, I have a quick question. Can you hear me?
All right, I think there are none.
Hey, Edgar. But I'm not sure if you're hearing us. No, I'm talking now. Can anyone else hear me, or is it just?
I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I think it was a problem because during the talk, I think Edgar couldn't hear us very well. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
No worries.
On and on.
Edgar, is there something we should do to gracefully shut down our instance here so that we'll be able to fire it up tomorrow? What should we do with our environment?
You were following. Great.
This is my favorite part of the workshop.
right. I would actually shut everything down just because So I'll go ahead and do that. So you can click here and
delete. Oh wait, you're not sharing.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I don't want it right because we don't want to delete this. We just want to shut it down. Is that right or no? Or is it the same thing?
I don't think there's a way to shut it down. You will have to delete these machines if you don't want to get charged. I certainly don't want to get charged, so I will delete it. Once you're familiar with this, it's very easy to go again through the procedure and just start the cluster again. Of course, it's kind of painful, and that's the reason why you may want to automatize this and use some tools like Terraform to just run it to create the cluster from an script. That's also possible instead of clicking. I will delete this. That's the way you do it. I will delete this so I don't get charged that much. And if needed, I can recreate it tomorrow. But as I said, everything will be done automatically, hopefully tomorrow. And we will concentrate on setting it up so we can run the workflow, or at least an example of the workflow that we could be doing in order to perform all of the analysis flow that we have gone through today.
Awesome, okay, thank you. Just wanted to make sure, thanks.
Yeah, sorry for that. It's kind of weird, the configuration sometimes of my headphones. All right, thanks a lot. I'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to stop the recording.
Ciao.